It looks different, Simon said. Clary looked up at him. Like the rest of the shadow hunters, she was dressed in what Simon could only describe as a cloak. It seemed to be what they broke out during cold winter weather, made of a heavy, velvety black material that buckled across the chest. He wondered where she'd gotten it. Maybe they just issued them. What does? The portal, he said. It looks different from when Magnus did it. More blue. Maybe they all have different senses of style. Simon looked over at Katerina. She seemed briskly efficient, like a hospital nurse or a kindergarten teacher. Definitely not like Magnus. How's Izzy? Worried, I think. Everyone's worried. There was a short silence. Clary exhaled, her breath floating white on the winter air. I don't like you going, Simon said, at exactly the same time that Clary said, I don't like going and leaving you here. I'll be fine, Simon said. I have Jordan looking after me. Indeed, Jordan was there, sitting on top of the wall that ran around the Institute and looking watchful. And no one's tried to kill me in at least 2 weeks. Not funny, Clary scowled. The problem, Simon reflected, was that it was difficult to reassure someone that you'd be fine when you were a daylighter. Some vampires might want Simon on their side, eager to benefit from his unusual powers. Camille had attempted to recruit him, and others might try. But Simon had the distinct impression that the vast majority of vampires wanted to kill him. I'm pretty sure Maureen's still hoping to get her hands on me, Simon said. Maureen was the head of the New York vampire clan, and believed that she was in love with Simon, which would have been less awkward if she hadn't been 13 years old. I know the Clave warned people not to touch me, but... Maureen wants to touch you, Clary said with a sideways grin. Bad touch. Silence, Frey. Jordan will keep her off you. Simon looked ahead meditatively. He had been trying not to stare at Isabel, who had greeted him with only a brief wave since he'd arrived at the Institute. She was helping her mother, her black hair flying in the brisk wind. You could just go up and talk to her, Clary said, instead of staring like a creeper. I'm not staring like a creeper. I'm staring subtly. I noticed, Clary pointed out. Look, you know how Isabel gets. When she's upset, she withdraws. She won't talk to anyone but Jace or Alec, because she hardly trusts anyone. But if you're going to be her boyfriend, you have to show her you're one of those people she can trust. I'm not her boyfriend. At least, I don't think I'm her boyfriend. She's never used the word boyfriend anyway. Clary kicked him in the ankle. You two need to DTR more than any other people I've ever met. Defining relationships over here, said a voice from behind them. Simon turned and saw Magnus, very tall against the dark sky behind them. He was soberly dressed, jeans and a black t-shirt, his dark hair partly in his eyes. I see that even as the world plunges into darkness and peril, you two stand around discussing your love lives. Teenagers. What are you doing here? Simon said, too surprised for a smart comeback. Came to see Alec, Magnus said. Clary raised her eyebrows at him. What was that about teenagers? Magnus held up a warning finger. Don't overstep yourself, Biscuit, he said, and moved past them, disappearing into the crowd around the portal. Biscuit, said Simon. Believe it or not, he's called me that before, Clary said. Simon, look. She turned toward him, tugging his hand out of his jeans pocket. She looked down at it and smiled. The ring, she said. Handy when it worked, wasn't it? Simon looked down as well. A hammered gold ring in the shape of a leaf encircled his right ring finger. It had once been a connection to Clary. Now, with hers destroyed, it was only a ring, but he kept it regardless. He knew it was a little close to having half of a BFF necklace, but he couldn't help it. It was a beautiful object, and still a symbol of the connection between them. She squeezed his hand hard, raising her eyes to his. Shadows moved in the green of her irises. He could tell she was afraid. I know it's just a council meeting, Clary started to say, but you're staying in Idris. Only until they can figure out what happened with the Institutes and how to protect them, said Clary. Then we'll come back. I know phones and texting and all that doesn't work in Idris, but if you need to talk to me, tell Magnus. He'll find a way to get me a message. Simon felt his throat tighten. Clary, I love you, she said. You're my best friend. She let go of his hand, her eyes shining. No, don't say anything. I don't want you to say anything. She turned and almost ran back toward the portal, where Jocelyn and Luke were waiting for her, three packed duffel bags at their feet. Luke glanced across the courtyard at Simon, his expression thoughtful. But where was Isabel? The crowd of shadow hunters had thinned. Jace had moved to stand beside Clary, his hand on her shoulder. Maris was near the portal, but Isabel, who had been with her. Simon, said a voice at his shoulder, and he turned to see Izzy, her face a pale smudge between dark hair and dark cloak, looking at him, her expression half angry, half sad. I guess this is the part where we say goodbye. Okay, Magnus said. You wanted to talk to me, so talk. Alec looked at him, wide-eyed. They had gone around the side of the church and were standing in a small winter-burned garden, among leafless hedges. Thick vines covered the stone wall and rusted gate nearby, now so denuded by winter that Alec could see the mundane street through the gaps in the iron door. A stone bench was nearby, its rough surface crusted with ice. I wanted... What? Magnus looked at him darkly, as if he had done something stupid. Alec suspected that he had. His nerves were jangling together like wind chimes, and he had a sick feeling in the pit of his stomach. The last time he had seen Magnus, the warlock had been walking away from him, vanishing into a disused subway tunnel, getting smaller and smaller until he disappeared. Aku Shinta Kamu, he'd said to Alec. I love you in Indonesian. It had given Alec a spark of hope, enough that he'd called Magnus dozens of times, enough to keep him checking his phone, checking the mail, even checking the windows of his room, which seemed strange and empty and unfamiliar without Magnus in it, not his room at all, for magically delivered notes or messages. And now Magnus was standing in front of him, with his raggedy black hair and slit-pupiled cat eyes, and his voice like dark molasses, and his cool, sharp, beautiful face that gave nothing whatsoever away, and Alec felt like he had swallowed glue. Wanted to talk to me, Magnus said. I assume that was the meaning of all those phone calls, and why you sent all your stupid friends over to my apartment. Or do you just do that to everyone? Alec swallowed against the dryness in his throat and said the first thing that came into his head. Aren't you ever going to forgive me? Magnus broke off and looked away, shaking his head. Alec, I have forgiven you. It doesn't seem like it. You seem angry. When Magnus looked back at him, it was with a gentler expression. I'm worried about you, he said. The attacks on the institutes. I just heard. Alec felt dizzy. Magnus forgave him. Magnus was worried about him. Did you know we were leaving for Idris? Katerina told me she'd been summoned to make a portal. I guessed, Magnus said wryly. I was a little surprised you hadn't called or texted to tell me you were going away. Well, you never answer my calls or texts, said Alec. That hasn't stopped you before. Everyone gives up eventually, Alec said. Besides, Jace broke my phone. Magnus huffed out a breath of laughter. Oh, Alexander. What? Alec asked, honestly puzzled. You're so... I really want to kiss you, Magnus said abruptly, and then shook his head. See, this is why I haven't been willing to see you. But you're here now, Alec said. He remembered the first time Magnus had ever kissed him, against the wall outside his apartment, and all his bones had turned to liquid, and he thought, oh right, this is what it's supposed to be like. I get it now. You could. I can't, Magnus said. It's not working. It wasn't working. You have to see that, don't you? His hands were on Alec's shoulders. Alec could feel Magnus's thumb brush against his neck, over his collar, and his whole body jumped. Don't you? Magnus said, and kissed him. Alec leaned into the kiss. It was utterly quiet. He heard the crunch of his boots on the snowy ground as he moved forward, Magnus's hand sliding around to steady the back of his neck, and Magnus tasted like he always did, sweet and bitter and familiar. And Alec parted his lips to gasp or breathe Magnus in. But it was too late because Magnus broke away from him with a wrench and stepped backward, and it was over. "What?" Alec said, feeling stunned and strangely diminished. "Magnus, what?" "I shouldn't have done that," Magnus said, all in a rush. He was clearly agitated, in a way Alec had rarely seen him, a flush along his high cheekbones. "I forgive you, but I can't be with you. I can't. It doesn't work. I'm going to live forever, or at least until someone finally kills me, and you're not, and it's too much for you to take on." "Don't tell me what's too much for me," said Alec with deadly flatness. Magnus so rarely looked surprised that the expression seemed almost foreign on his face. "It's too much for most people," he said, "most mortals, and not easy on us either. Watching someone you love age and die. I knew a girl once, a mortal like me." "And she was with someone mortal?" said Alec. "What happened?"
"He died," Magnus said. There was a finality to the way that he said it that spoke of a deeper grief than words could paint. His cat's eyes shone in the dark. "I don't know why I thought this would ever work," he said. "I'm sorry, Alec. I shouldn't have come."
"No," Alec said, "you shouldn't." Magnus was looking at Alec a little warily, as if he had approached someone familiar on the street only to find out they were a stranger.
"I don't know why you did," Alec said. "I know I've been torturing myself for weeks now about you, and what I did, and how I shouldn't have done it. Shouldn't ever have talked to Camille. I've been sorry, and I've understood, and I've apologized and apologized, and you haven't ever been there. I did all that without you, so it makes me wonder what else I could do without you."
He looked at Magnus meditatively. "It was my fault what happened, but it was your fault too. I could have learned not to care that you are immortal and I'm mortal. Everyone gets the time they get together and no more. Maybe we're not so different that way. But you know what I can't get past? That you never tell me anything. I don't know when you were born. I don't know anything about your life, what your real name is, or about your family, or what the first face you ever loved was, or the first time your heart was broken. You know everything about me, and I know nothing about you. That's the real problem."
"I told you," Magnus said softly, "on our first date, that you would have to take me as I came, no questions."
Alec waved that away. "That's not a fair thing to ask. And you know, you knew. I didn't understand enough about love then to understand that. You act like you're the wronged party. But you had a hand in this, Magnus."
"Yes," Magnus said after a pause. "Yes, I suppose I did."
"But that doesn't change anything?" Alec said, feeling the cold air stealing under his ribcage.
"It never does with you."
"I can't change," Magnus said. "It's been too long. We petrify, you know, immortals, like fossils turned to stone. I thought when I met you that you had all this wonder and all this joy, and everything was new to you, and I thought it would change me, but..."
"Change yourself," Alec said, but it didn't come out angry or stern, as he had intended it, but soft, like a plea.
But Magnus only shook his head.
"Alec," he said, "you know my dream, the one about the city made of blood, and blood in the streets, and towers of bone. If Sebastian gets what he wants, that will be this world. The blood will be Nephilim blood. Go to Idris. You're safer there. But don't be trusting, and don't let your guard down. I need you to live," he breathed, and turned around very abruptly and walked away. "I need you to live." Alec sat down on the frozen stone bench and put his face in his hands.
"Not goodbye forever," Simon protested.
but Isabel just frowned. "Come here," she said, and tugged at his sleeve. She was wearing dark red velvet gloves, and her hand looked like a splash of blood against the navy fabric of his jacket. Simon pushed the thought away. He wished he wouldn't think about blood at inopportune times. "Come where?" Isabel just rolled her eyes and pulled him sideways into a shadowed alcove near the front gates of the Institute. The space wasn't a large one, and Simon could feel the heat from Isabel's body. Warmth and cold didn't affect him since he'd become a vampire, unless it was the heat of blood. He didn't know if it was because he'd drunk Isabel's blood before, or if it was something deeper, but he was aware of the pulse of blood through her veins the way he was of no one else's. "I wish I were coming with you to Idris," he said without preamble. "You're safer here," she said, though her dark eyes softened. "Besides, we're not going forever." "The only downworlders who can go to Alicante are council members, because they're going to have a meeting, figure out what we're all going to do, and probably send us back out. We can't hide in Idris while Sebastian rampages around outside it. Shadow hunters don't do that." He stroked a finger down her cheek. "But you want me to hide here?" "You've got Jordan to want you here," she said. "Your own personal bodyguard. You're Clary's best friend," she added. "Sebastian knows that you're hostage material. You should be where he isn't. He's never shown any interest in me before. I don't see why he'd start now." She shrugged, pulling her cloak tighter around herself. "He's never shown any interest in anyone but Clary and Jace, but that doesn't mean he won't start. He's not stupid." She said it grudgingly, as if she hated to give Sebastian even that much credit. "Clary would do anything for you. She'd do anything for you too, Izzy." And at Isabel's doubtful look, he cupped her cheek. "Okay. So if you won't be gone all that long, then what's all this about then?" She made a face. Her cheeks and mouth were rosy, the cold bringing the red to the surface. He wished he could press his cold lips to hers, so full of blood and life and warmth. But he was conscious of her parents watching. "I heard Clary when she was saying goodbye to you. She said she loved you." Simon stared. "Yes, but she didn't mean it that way, Izzy." "I know that," Isabel protested. "Please, I know that. But it's just that she says it so easily and you say it back so easily. And I've never said it to anyone. Not anyone who wasn't related to me." "But if you say it," he said, "you could get hurt. That's why you don't. So could you." Her eyes were big and black, reflecting the stars. "Get hurt. I could hurt you." "I know," Simon said. "I know, and I don't care. Jace told me once you'd walk all over my heart in high-heeled boots, and it hasn't stopped me." Isabel gave a little gasp of startled laughter. "He said that. And you stuck around." He leaned in toward her. If he had breath, it would have stirred her hair. "I would consider it an honor." She turned her head, and their lips brushed together. Hers were achingly warm. She was doing something with her hands. Unfastening her cloak, he thought for a moment. But surely Isabel wasn't about to start taking her clothes off in front of her entire family. Not that Simon was sure he'd have the fortitude to stop her. She was Isabel, after all, and she had almost, said she loved him. Her lips moved against his skin as she spoke. "Take this," she whispered, and he felt something cold at the back of his neck, and the smooth glide of velvet as she drew back and her gloves brushed his throat. He glanced down. Against his chest gleamed a blood-red square, Isabel's ruby pendant. It was a shadow hunter heirloom, enchanted to detect the presence of demonic energy. "I can't take this," he said, shocked. "Iz, this must be worth a fortune." She squared her shoulders. "It's a loan, not a gift. Keep it until I see you again." She brushed her gloved fingers across the ruby. "There's an old story that it came into our family by way of a vampire, so it's fitting." "Isabella, don't," she said, cutting him off, though he didn't know exactly what he'd been about to say. "Don't say it, not now." She was backing away from him.
He could see her family behind her, all that was left of the conclave. Luke had gone through the portal, and Jocelyn was in the middle of following him. Alec, coming around the side of the Institute with his hands in his pockets, glanced over at Isabel and Simon, raised an eyebrow, and kept walking.
"Just don't date anyone else while I'm gone, okay?"
He stared after her.
"Does that mean we're dating?" he said.
But she only quirked a smile, and then turned and dashed toward the portal. He saw her take Alec's hand, and they stepped through together. Maris followed, and then Jace, and then finally, Clary was the last, standing beside Katerina, framed by sizzling blue light. She winked at Simon and stepped through. He saw the whirl of the portal as it caught her, and then she was gone. Simon put his hand to the ruby at his throat. He thought he could feel a beat inside the stone, a shifting pulse. It was almost like having a heart again.
Three. Birds to the Mountain. Clary set her bag down by the door and looked around. She could hear her mother and Luke moving around her, putting down their own luggage, turning on the witch lights that illuminated Armitage's house. Clary braced herself. They still had little idea how Armitage had been taken by Sebastian. Though the place had already been examined by council members for dangerous materials, Clary knew her brother. If the mood had taken him, he would have destroyed everything in the house, just to show that he could. Turned the sofas to kindling, shattered the glass in the mirrors, blown the windows to smithereens. She heard her mother give a small exhale of relief and knew Jocelyn must have been thinking what Clary was. Whatever had happened, the house looked fine. There was nothing in it to indicate that harm had come to Armitage. Books were stacked on the coffee table, the floors were dusty but uncluttered. The photographs on the walls were straight. Clary saw with a pang that there was a recent photograph near the fireplace of her, Luke, and Jocelyn at Coney Island, arms around one another smiling. She thought of the last time she had seen Luke's sister, Sebastian, forcing Armitage to drink from the infernal cup as she screamed in protest. The way the personality had faded out of her eyes after she had swallowed its contents. Clary wondered if that was what it was like to watch someone die. Not that she hadn't seen death, too. Valentine had died in front of her. Surely she was too young to have so many ghosts. Luke had moved to look at the fireplace and the photos hanging around it. He reached out to touch one that showed two blue-eyed children. One of them, the younger boy, was drawing, while his sister looked on, her expression fond. Luke looked exhausted. Their portal travel had taken them to the guard, and they had walked down through the city to Armitage's house. Luke still winced often from the pain of the wound in his side that hadn't quite healed, but Clary doubted the injury was what was affecting him. The quiet in Armitage's house. The homey rag rugs on the floor, the carefully arranged personal mementos. Everything spoke of an ordinary life, interrupted in the most terrible way possible. Jocelyn moved over to put her hand on Luke's shoulder, murmuring soothingly. He turned in the circle of her arms, putting his head against her shoulder. It was more comforting than in any way romantic, but Clary still felt as if she had stumbled on a private moment. Soundlessly, she plucked up her duffel bag and made her way up the stairs. The spare room hadn't changed. Small, the walls painted white, the windows like portholes, circular. There was the window Jace had crawled through one night, and the same colourful quilt on the bed. She dropped her bag onto the floor near the nightstand where Jace had left a letter in the morning telling her he was going and he wasn't coming back. She sat down on the edge of the bed, trying to shake off the web of memories. She hadn't realized how hard it would be to be back in Idris. New York was home, normal. Idris was war and devastation. In Idris, she had seen death for the first time. Her blood was humming, pounding hard in her ears. She wanted to see Jace, to see Alec and Isabel. They would ground her, give her a sense of normalcy. She was able, very faintly, to hear her mother and Luke moving around downstairs, possibly even the clink of cups in the kitchen, She swung herself off the bed and went to the foot, where a square trunk rested. It was the trunk Armitage had brought up for her when she had been here before, telling her to go through it to find clothes. She knelt down now and opened it, the same clothes carefully packed away between layers of paper, school uniforms, practical sweaters and jeans, more formal shirts and skirts, and beneath that, a dress Clary had first thought was a wedding gown. She drew it out. Now that she was more familiar with shadow hunters and their world, she recognized it for what it was. Morning clothes. A white dress, simple. The close-fitting jacket, with silver morning runes worked into the material. And there, the cuffs, an almost invisible design of birds. Herons. Clary laid the clothes carefully on the bed. She could see in her mind's eye Armitage wearing these clothes when Stephen Herondale had died. Putting them on carefully, smoothing down the fabric, buttoning the jacket clothes, all to mourn a man to whom she'd no longer been married. Widow's clothes for someone who had not been able to call herself a widow. Clary? It was her mother leaning in the doorway, watching her. What are those? Oh. She crossed the room, touched the fabric of the dress and sighed. Oh, Armitage. She never did get over Stephen, did she? Asked Clary. Sometimes people don't. Jocelyn's hand moved from the dress to Clary's hair, tucked it back with quick motherly precision. And Nephilim, we do tend to love very overwhelmingly. To fall in love only once, to die of grief over love. My old tutor used to say that the hearts of Nephilim were like the hearts of angels. They felt every human pain and never healed. But you did. You loved Valentine, but now you love Luke. I know. Jocelyn's look was far away. It wasn't until I spent more time in the mundane world that I started to realize that it wasn't how most human beings thought of love. I realized that you might have it more than once, that your heart could heal, that you could love over and over again. And I always loved Luke. I might not have known it, but I always did love him. Jocelyn pointed at the clothes on the bed. You should wear the morning jacket, she said, tomorrow. Startled, Clary said, to the meeting? Shadow hunters have died and been turned dark, said Jocelyn. Every shadow hunter lost is someone's son, brother, sister, cousin. Nephilim are a family. A dysfunctional family, but... She touched her daughter's face, her own expression hidden in the shadows. Get some sleep, Clary, she said. Tomorrow is going to be a long day. After the door shut behind her mother, Clary put on her nightgown and then clambered obediently into bed. She shut her eyes and tried to sleep, but sleep wouldn't come. Images kept bursting behind her eyelids like fireworks, angels falling from the sky, golden blood, ethereal in his chains with his blinded eyes, telling her of the images of runes he had given her through her life, the visions and dreams of the future. She remembered her dreams of her brother with black wings that spilled blood walking across a frozen lake. She threw the coverlet off. She felt hot and itchy, too strung up to sleep. After getting out of bed, she padded downstairs in search of a glass of water. The living room was half-lit, dim witch light spilling down the corridor. Murmurs came from beyond the door. Someone was awake and talking in the kitchen. Clary moved down the corridor warily, until soft, overheard whispers began to take on shape and familiarity. She recognized her mother's voice first, taut with distress. "But I just don't understand how it could have been in the cupboard," she was saying. "I haven't seen it since Valentine took everything we owned back in New York." Luke spoke. "Didn't Clary say that Jonathan had it?" "Yes, but then it would have been destroyed with that foul apartment, wouldn't it?" Jocelyn's voice rose as Clary moved to stand in the doorway of the kitchen. "The one with the clothes Valentine bought for me, as if I were coming back." Clary stood very still. Her mother and Luke were sitting at the kitchen table. Her mother had her head down on one hand and Luke was rubbing her back. Clary had told her mother everything about the apartment, about how Valentine had maintained it with all Jocelyn's things there, determined that one day his wife would come back and live with him. Her mother had listened calmly, but clearly the story had upset her much more than Clary had realized. He's gone.